Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome the new media personality for the American Association, Matt Yazel. Matt, thanks for joining us this week.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
So, Matt, new job here for you. So tell us a little bit about your career and how you got to this point.
Yeah, of course. So this will be my third year working in baseball in general. In the last two summers, I've spent with two different baseball teams. In 2021, I was with my hometown, Madison Mallards, in the Northwoods League as their play-by-play broadcaster and media relations as well. And then last summer was my first taste of the independent baseball world. I was in Boise, Idaho with the Boise Hawks of the Pioneer League. So that's where I kind of learned about independent baseball and all it has to offer. I learned about a lot of the other leagues as well, including the American Association, which certainly drew my eye as it was, you know, mostly in the Midwest, the central United States, which is where I'm from, of course, in Wisconsin. So when this opportunity came up, you know, it wasn't originally, you know, what I was looking for in terms of, you know, what I've done being a play-by-play broadcaster primarily, but it was a really cool opportunity, I thought, and I jumped on it and it all worked out, and I'm really excited.
Now, as you come into this role this year, Matt, does the league come to you and say, here's some certain things we want to do, but you have, you know, some free rein to add in your own ideas? Or what becomes the way, the direction for the your job itself and how you try to promote the league?
Yeah, there's definitely a good, you know, there's kind of the framework that's there, of course. You know, Carter Wodeo did a great job the last 2 years with the Daily Whip Round and, of course, everything else that he did with this role. So there's certainly a framework kind of in mind there. And certainly early on, you know, I'll want to follow that and do the best job I can in terms of that. But they have certainly offered up you know, kind of creative freedom, and we'll certainly try to expand on some new ideas and some different ways to go about things throughout the season. But, yeah, you know, fans of the league certainly familiar with the Daily Whip Round format. It'll be a similar product, at least early on, but there is some freedom there as well.
What are some ideas you're thinking of, Matt, that if you don't mind sharing a couple of them with us?
Right, yeah. I mean, one thing, you know, the one big advantage for me in this role is that I am in a good location for the league. You know, they marketed the role as a remote job, essentially, but a big plus is being close to teams. And living in Milwaukee, I'm obviously very close to the two teams in Wisconsin. Chicago, Kane County, Gary are all very close driving distance. And of course, would love to explore the league beyond that as well. So I think some more in-person stuff could be in store, some more broadcasts, hopefully some league-wide broadcasts down the line. But, you know, certainly I can speak more to that once the season begins and the job kind of gets underway. But definitely going to be cooking up some good things, and I'm really excited to see what we can do.
Well, that's pretty exciting. Do you see at some point, kind of listening to you there, do you envision a point where you might do some play-by-play for the league, like a league broadcast one night?
I certainly hope so, and we certainly talked about that through the application process. To my understanding, you know, Carter called the championship series in person, so that would certainly be an opportunity I'm hoping to take on and I'm expecting to do. But throughout the season, I mean, I think any way from a league-wide perspective to kind of highlight some of the big-time matchups that matter a lot throughout the regular season would be a good thing to do. Sort of, you know, similar to how, you know, the MLB puts certain games on, you know, the national stage. It could kind of be that kind of deal. So that's kind of something I would love to do. No, you know, nothing firm as of now, I'll say, but hoping to do that, certainly, because that's my background is play-by-play, but certainly a different role here.
No, I have to ask you a little bit about your time there in the Pioneer League. It looks like you guys have quite the travel there. So what did you do to occupy your time while you're moving?
Oh, boy, yeah. Well, my first time out west in general in the U.S., and nothing is close to each other out west and in the Pioneer League. Our shortest trip, I believe, was like 3.5 hours, and our longest was we drove up from Boise to Kalispell, Montana, which I think was about 11 hours on the bus. So lots of travel, and I was lucky enough to get a bus seat, you know, by myself. I didn't have to double up with somebody like some of the rookie players did. But, you know, you try to fall asleep when you can. I'm not a great travel sleeper, but, you know, every now and then I do a little prep for the upcoming series if we're playing a new team, or, you know, you just kind of lucky enough, some of the drives through Montana and such were absolutely beautiful to look at, just the mountains and the hills and whatnot. So most of the time I just tried to relax and get a little break from the baseball grind.
Well, compare that to the roads that you took in 2021 with the Madison Mallards. I'm calling games from the duck blind and exploring Wisconsin.
Unfortunately, I did not get to travel with the Mallards, so I cannot speak to that. That role I did not get to travel. So but calling games from, the duck pond in Madison was, of course, amazing, especially me being from there. And I actually played on that field as a high school baseball player. So it was kind of a full circle moment there. The only time I traveled was when the Mallards made the playoffs that year, and we did like kind of a staff trip to Fond du Lac for our first playoff series. So that was fun, but did not get to travel. So traveling was a new experience for me last year. And it was great. You know, it's kind of a further connection with the team, the coaches, and you get to see some new areas of the country. So it was very cool.
You know, Matt, Kevin has a long history of watching and, you know, being part of what's gone on there in the Northwoods League. I'm kind of curious what you thought of the league itself and the way that it develops players.
Yeah, I thought it was a very cool league, very fun experience to be in. It was interesting kind of how different it is from the other summer collegiate leagues. You know, I know the season runs quite a bit longer. I think in the opinion of many, a little too long, because a lot of the players, you see a lot of the teams lose their best players at the end of the year because, you know, the college coaches want them to go back to school. But in general, I think the fan experience is great. There's nothing like Madison in terms of the attendance. I mean, averaging over 6,000 fans a night is pretty crazy for any minor league type team, whatever level it is. And so it was really fun. I thought from a fan perspective, it was great. There is some really high level talent in the league. It might not be, I'm sure many of you, you know, the Cape Cod League is maybe the top in terms of talent, and I wouldn't disagree, but I think it was a very good league. It was fun to follow all year long. From a fan perspective, I think it's a great experience.
I think you make a very good point as far as the season running long. And the example I use is I went to a playoff game. It was Mankato versus St. Cloud. I get there, look at the roster for the night, and I think Mankato had maybe 13 guys available. They had to start a pitcher in right field, and you just knew right there it was like, it just seems like whatever team can find a way to keep the most guys around are the team that's going to more than likely win the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. We actually, that year, funny enough, they were kind of struggling early on, and then even through the second half, but then we the Mallards had a group of like four pretty talented guys in terms of the rest of the Northwood League, top talent level players. And ultimately, they were just the team that were able to hang on to most of their guys. And so they were able to surge late in the year and make the playoffs. They didn't win it all that year, but that's kind of how it is. I mean, pretty much every team loses at least their top few players. So you end up getting, we ended up getting a lot of local guys, like Madison College, junior college guys, and things of that nature. I think they pulled a kid who just graduated high school at the end of our season, in a local Madison kid. So it's very interesting. I think there could be some reform there, but yeah.
Now, I know you didn't get to go on the road, but did you hear any interesting stories from the road? Because there's a Twitter page, Foul Pole Sports, that kind of highlights some of the oddball things that can happen in the Northwoods League. Did you get any stories from the players on, like, any less than desirable post game spreads or any hijinks in the bullpen or on bus trips?
Well, definitely heard about the post game spreads in certain places. I guess I can't pinpoint certain things now, but that was a common theme, was some teams giving out real food and some teams giving out some, you know, like sandwiches or not, you know, nothing nutritious, basically. That was a common theme. I will say bullpen, since you say bullpen hijinks, in Madison, we had a situation where, it was the team in Green Bay. I can't even remember what they're called now. They've changed their name a few times. But they were in Madison, and throughout the duck pond does not hold water very well, so rain can cause some issues. But and the visitor's bullpen is basically just a patch of dirt. So they spent a whole game, a whole night, digging this massive hole in the bullpen. The whole team did. And it was like, got to a point where, you know, our staff went over there the next day, and it was like a pretty like dangerous hole if somebody were to like trip into it or whatever. I don't know what led them to do that, but yeah, so that happened to Madison, and it led to Green Bay's whole team sending an apology letter to our front office, which was hysterical for us to read one day in the front office, of reading all of these bullpen guys rather pathetic apology letters that were forced upon them. But yeah, so that was a fun story and a fun day for our staff.
Was that back when they were still called the Booyah?
Yes, thank you. They were the Booyah then. I think they're like the Rockers or something now. But
well, maybe they're thinking a team change name will help them be better. Is that the goal here or something? Maybe you never know.
Yeah.
So you were saying that you learned a little bit about independent. We should say partner league, because that's the appropriate term now to use. So
right. Yes.
What are your thoughts on American Association Baseball as you head into the season?
You know what? Throughout the whole year, last year, you know, just again learning about it for the first time. I mean, I went into, you know, when I was applying for jobs last summer, I did not know who the Boise Hawks were or what that league was, and I kind of jumped into it. But hearing about it, you know, we had certain guys who had played in the American Association and then came to us. And what you heard was just how the talent level in the American Association is just really the best among the partner leagues. And it's really, you know, top level in terms of, you know, hearing more about, yeah, the player specifically rather than anything else, the fans, stadiums, whatever. Just the level of talent that's in this league is really second to none. So that's what certainly excited me. But then also, yeah, you know, the big, the markets that are in this league, of course, again, kind of like I mentioned, like centrally located. I've never actually been to a Milwaukee Milkman game. I will have to admit that. I'm very much looking forward to, because I've always wanted to go. I learned about the Milkmen specifically when Tim Dillard played for them a few years ago. of course, former Brewers pitcher, and now he's on the Brewers broadcast crew. But that was kind of a cool thing, and sort of introduced me to the Melkman a little bit. And now, you know, the Doc Hound's a new team that I drive by their stadium all the time along the highway. And, yeah, so I'm really excited for that, and I'm really excited to, you know, see the talent this league has in terms of the players and to learn more about kind of the fan bases. And, yeah, it's just it's a great league, and it's a great opportunity for these guys to play competitive baseball, but also, you know, strive for their goals ultimately to get beyond that.
Do you see yourself where you're at? You know, you mentioned it earlier about seeing the ballparks, because you are set pretty centrally located. I know for the most part, Carter did his show from home and then interviewed players through Zoom or whatever. Do you see yourself maybe taking the show on the road a bit and doing the show live from a ballpark and having a player on live instead of from a Zoom situation?
You know, that's a great idea. I think I would love to certainly get around to the ballparks. I've kind of been connecting with some of the other broadcasters. A few of them I already knew, and they've reached out since kind of the announcement, but connecting with some others as well. And I'm really hoping to kind of get around and, you know, certainly make some weekend trips to some big series. And, you know, ultimately it's, yeah, I'm located in Milwaukee, but it's a league-wide position. I want to be able to connect with every fan base and showcase, you know, the stars, the star power around the league. So I think being able to travel around and hopefully, you know, talking to the guys who make the league what it is, you know, would be a great thing. And hopefully we can certainly make a lot of that stuff happen.
Well, I'm sure Josh Schaub will just give you the Lee credit card, whatever you need to ring up, travel expenses, hotels,
yes, right,
steak dinners, whatever. I'm sure he'll take care of you.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get a private jet to Winnipeg in a few weeks or something.
There you go.
Matt, I'm thinking coming into the league kind of a fresh guy, and it sounds like you're wanting to learn from kind of the fan perspective of this as well. I think you have a great perspective to introducing the league to a lot of, especially newer fans out there, because you're kind of a newer person to it. Are you viewing this as an opportunity to not only learn, but share your enthusiasm about learning about the league with fans in that way?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, there's always a lot to learn when it comes to, you know, these minor league, to, you know, partner league type leagues. You know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of family members and friends who, you know, have seen I got the job, don't know what the American Association is. I mean, it's just kind of, you know, you kind of got to be in that world. And hopefully, you know, the goal, especially for someone in my position, is to, you know, get the word out and share the really cool stories from these players. But also, you know, you mentioned the teams and the fans. You know, I learned last summer, it's like I'm going to cities that I've never been and some cities I hadn't even known before. And yet you go to the ballpark and there's, you know, 2,000-4,000 people there cheering for a team. You know, they don't have any other team in town in Ogden, Utah, or Missoula, Montana, or wherever it is. This league's a little different. Of course, you got some cities where you got some other things going on, but there's still plenty of people filling these ballparks and, you know, calling themselves fans of these teams and really connecting with them from a community perspective. So certainly want to share all that and promote all that and get the word out about all of these markets, all of these stars, and hopefully promote the game as well as I can from a league-wide perspective.
Now, was baseball always your first love? Was this kind of the dream job, in a sense, that you always wanted to be involved as a broadcaster in the baseball world?
Yeah, so baseball is the sport that I played, you know, at a competitive level in high school. I also played some club baseball in, at Marquette. I would say in terms of a first love, like from when I was young, that would probably be basketball. I picked that up when I was much younger. Baseball, I didn't really pick up until around like middle school, I would say. So I love basketball as well. And of course, Marquette, unfortunately, did not have a baseball team. They have a high level basketball team. That's where I got my broadcasting start. Once I learned I wanted to be a broadcaster from calling basketball games at Marquette, that's when I was like, baseball is my number one passion. As a fan, the Milwaukee Brewers would be my, when people ask me what team I care about the most, I would say the Brewers. So that's what made me, really go hard for, the Mallards job and then want to continue doing that last summer. So, yes, I would certainly say now baseball is number one. Basketball is right behind it. I still love calling basketball, and I would love to do that during the baseball off season, which is a pretty common thing to do. But, it's a sport I understand the most, for sure.
Now, knowing you were in Boise, I'm assuming that you have at least some hockey roots now. Is that true? Watch a little hockey there?
hockey has never been a big part of my life. They got the Steelheads there. I never saw any hockey while I was out there. Wisconsin, it's, obviously we don't have a pro team here, but we do have the Milwaukee Admirals, a minor league team in town. I've seen a game or two of them, but not a huge hockey guy, unfortunately, for any hockey fan.
You might not hold that ball in this league. We've got a lot of hockey connections in this league. might have to acclimate a bit.
Oh, boy. All right, I'll start watching more.
Well, that's awesome. So, in the meantime, kind of going between Boise this last year and coming out here to take over in the American Association as this media personality, are there other things that you broadcast in during the off season?
Yeah, I actually had about a month ago, I took on a basketball broadcast. It was on ESPN Plus. It's kind of a new thing they're doing, junior college game of the week, and it happened to be between two Milwaukee area teams, MATC, Milwaukee Area Techno College, and Bryan and Stratton, who are which I didn't know before I was on this call. They're they were like top 10 nationally ranked junior college basketball teams. And it was actually a great game. And so I did some of that and I formed some good connections there. But otherwise, my plan was kind of to come back from Boise. I came back home from out west about the start of October, and plan was kind of to, take a step back and prepare for the next baseball season and see where the opportunity would come up. Originally the thinking was potentially, trying to get into minor league affiliated ball in some way. The opportunities just weren't really there. And then of course this came around and it just all worked out, and I'm thrilled to, be staying here in Milwaukee and to work in a great league like this, for sure.
So being a Brewers fan growing up, who were your favorite players?
All-time favorite player is Prince Fielder. I think just right around the time when, that group of Brewers, those teams around like 2008 and then eventually 2011. 2011 is what really kind of turned me into a bigger baseball fan. Was that Brewers team that went to the NLCS. But yeah, Prince Fielder, favorite player, for sure. Obviously, we don't need to talk too much about Ryan Braun, but he's in that circle as well. And I will also mention a non-Brewer who I consider my favorite pitcher all time would be from that era as well, and that would be Tim Lincecum.
Of course.
Yeah, very good pick now, right there. I like that.
Now, being a Milwaukee guy, I have to ask you, and this is in part to compare notes. If somebody was going to Milwaukee and they asked you the best place to go for custard, where would you say?
Oh, wow. Is this a Culver's versus Cops question?
Well, you haven't named my place yet, but...
Really? Okay. Okay, well, yeah, for those who... I think Culver's is relatively well-known for the people who are not from Milwaukee. Cops is a more of a local one. Both are great. I would say, I guess I don't know if you know, that pretty close to me there's a ice cream place called Purple Door, which is just an ice cream shop, and that's pretty good stuff. But obviously, I love Culver's as much as anyone. So I would love to hear your spot, though.
Gilly's Custard Stand.
Gilly's Custard Stand. I don't think I know that one.
It's off of Blue Mountain Road. It's about, I'd say, a mile and a half west of Miller Park. And that is where, when Bud Selig was commissioner, that's where he would go to have lunch every day. He'd pull through the drive-thru, get a burger and a custard shake.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'll have to go check it out.
Yeah, it is Milwaukee's oldest custard stand, or so they say. So I highly recommend it. And
okay.
The second part, what would you say as far as pizza goes, what would be your go-to Milwaukee pizza?
There's a pretty good place in the Third Ward called Riverfront Pizzeria. That's a pretty good spot. Right along the river there. Obviously, it's called Riverfront. Let's see. I live pretty close to a place called Fixture, which is good. But, yeah, I would probably say Riverfront would be top pizza restaurant, at least.
Okay, I might have to check that out. I did discover Zaffarel's a few years back, and that's very good.
That is certainly up there as well. That's a good one. I have had that before.
And I wish I could remember when Adam Brett Walker was with the Milwaukee Milkmen. He told us about a pizza place, too, that was really good. I cannot remember the name of it, but him being a Milwaukee guy, we also had to quiz him about Milwaukee cuisine.
Just so you know, Matt, we might be able to tell you a few things about American Association Baseball, but we can tell you a lot about the best places to go eat when you're in American Association Park. So that you can
great.
Be guaranteed of.
Yeah, I'm a big – yeah, I love that. I'm big on – I think I got pretty good, traveling around to the different places out west of, looking up kind of the best local places and trying them out. So I plan to do the same if I'm able to get around in the American Association. And I need to do so in Milwaukee as well. It's funny enough, obviously I went to school at Marquette, so I've lived in Milwaukee for a while, but this will actually be my first summer living in Milwaukee, which is, of course, the best time by far to be in the city. So I will certainly be able to get around a little more and be trying some places when it's not 30 degrees and snowing like it is today for some reason.
I'm kind of curious, when you were saying your family had never really heard about American Association, so when you're trying to explain this to them, were they like, oh, okay, we get it now, or were they like, we still don't get what you're talking about?
Oh, boy. It takes multiple explanations over a long period of time with with my parents, who I love dearly, but... Yeah, I know. I mean, they're really excited about it, though. And I think, I try to simplify it. I'll just say, you'll see me on Facebook every day. That's what my mom needed to hear. So you'll see the show posted on Facebook every day. You'll see my face. You can share it with your friends or whatever you want to do. But that's how I try to simplify it. But yeah, they're very excited. I'll try to get them up to a Milkman or a, I guess Doc Hounds would be closer to them in Madison, but I kind of got both of my parents into baseball just simply by the fact that I wanted to turn the Brewer game on every night, just because they play every night, and that, you know, we sit down at the couch for dinner and want to put something on. And eventually I kind of succeeded. My mom's a Brewers diehard now over anything else. She doesn't really like the Bucks. She doesn't really, well, not doesn't like, but she doesn't love sitting down and watching any other sport, but she loves watching baseball. So that was a success story on my part.
Well, Brewer's off to a fast start, so she's got to be pretty happy right now.
Oh, yeah. Love what I'm seeing so far. 3 out of 4, San Diego, that's huge. Some of the new guys we got looking good, so I'm encouraged by them for sure.
Well, right on. Well, Matt, we appreciate you coming on with us here tonight. Since you're a new guy, we have to tell you, every guest that we have on the show gets to give us a final thought. So whatever you would like to talk about this evening, the floor is yours.
Oh, man. Well, I will say, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. I look forward to getting started with this job. I've been, I want to say thanks to any of the American Association fans who may be listening and have welcomed. I feel very welcomed into the league already just from the reaction of the, the posts online and kind of the messages. So I've been very pleased with that. Really look forward to working with all the different staff members of the teams and the broadcasters, as I mentioned. And, again, my goal right now before the season is to learn and to learn about all the teams, fan bases, the players, and, to be able to put forth the best product possible when the season gets underway and, of course, get better and better throughout the year. I want to be able to work together with, the people who make this league what it is. And yeah, I couldn't be more excited to get going. May 11th, opening day. Mark your calendars. I can't wait.
Fantastic. Matt Yazel, thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you guys.
Well, Kevin, sounds like we have a great new media personality person in the league, and Matt looks like he's ready to do a great job for the American Association.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what he brings to the table, a new voice for the league. And, when he mentions how soon the season's coming, it really does kind of hit you that the season's right around the corner. So very excited to see what he'll bring to the table.
Yeah,
and a Milwaukee guy, so I always like having Milwaukee connections, so it's a good thing.
Absolutely. As you and I were talking, 24 days till the season gets underway, and
wow.
I was liking that. I also kind of like the air to him, the way that he speaks and stuff like that, very Joe Brand like. I like that, so I think
true.
He's going to be a great addition to the league. So very excited.
Yeah, now that you mentioned that, yeah.
Well, Kevin, let's talk about stuff going on around the American Association, and now we're getting down to transactions here, Kevin. We have a lot of teams are in the 20s with the number of players that they have. It's just George Samath, technically, I'm sure he's got more players close to under contract, but the only guy in the 10 right now, everybody else is either pretty close to 20 or over at this point. So King County Cougars are going to be pretty frantic over the next few weeks. We're going to see for contract signings. Let's start out going around the league here, Kevin, with stuff going on. We're going to begin with the Kansas City Monarchs because we talked last week about them re-signing Matt Hartman and Jordan Martinson. Today they go out there and get Brandon Finnegan, and they re-sign Brandon. I think is he coach or cook? Was it coach?
I think it was coach. You know, it was like there was two pitchers out there. One went by coach and one went by cook. So I remember there was like one that I thought this was for Sioux City, and I thought one was Kansas City or some sort of deal like that.
Yeah,
so.
I think you are right. Cook was a guy, or coach, I'm sorry, I guess is where we're saying this right. That's the way we're believing. Coach was a guy who had an opportunity performing that closer's role for them last season, was great in the setup role, a guy that Joe Calfapietra clearly has a lot of confidence in.
And, that's a good thing. You go into the season a lot of these teams, if you're almost turning over your entire roster, you're going to have a feeling out process where you're going into spring training and you don't really have a set idea of what exactly you want to do. And you could have a plan on spring training where pitcher A is going to be your closer, and then you're a week into the season and thinking, well, this isn't quite working out. I've got a guy that can be better. You know, and since I'm, of course, a dyed-in-the-wool St. Paul Saints guy, I'll use 2015 for an example, that great team the Saints had. Well, going into the season, Alan Oaks, a big right-hander, was the closer. And I don't think hardly anyone remembers that because he maybe only pitched three or four games for the Saints. And there's another guy, Ryan Rodabaugh, that closed the game, and he never looked back and became an all-star closer with St. Paul. And I don't know, I'm pretty sure he led the league in saves, but he ended up having a great two-year career for St. Paul. But it's crazy to think that, you know, going into the season, his first season, he wasn't even thought of as a closer. But the point I'm getting to is, you know, having a guy like Coach where you've had him before, you have the benefit of knowing where he will most likely fit in as far as the pitching staff and the bullpen.
Yeah, I think we both agree Alex Valdez is going to get the chance to be the closer there, but, you know, he just had a limited amount of time with the team last year coming in late August. And taking over that job. But, you know, crazy things happen in the American Association. Not only, you know, do you think that maybe Valdez has a couple of hiccups and you're looking another direction, but he's got a live arm and could very easily be signed by an affiliate club. And then you're looking to find a guy that you can confidently believe is closing out games for you. And Coach has been that guy. So I think that they're looking at that. And, you know, Joe's a smart guy. He's not leaving anything to chance. And so he's making sure his bullpen is set to close out games for him if he needs it. So. The interesting point you made there, Kevin, about is a massive changeover. And, you know, today I had an article out there looking at five players that I think are going to have a lot of pressure on this season and should have quality years for them. And one of those guys that they have for them on Kansas City's roster, excuse me, is Justin Wiley, who's going to comes in with a big bat out of the Frontier League. None of the guys we've been familiar with over the last couple of years really in this lineup, Gio Brusa, the only guy returning at this moment from last year's team that's going to be an everyday player. And this is going to be a very drastically different Kansas City Monarchs club.
It'll be different not seeing a Monarchs lineup with all Yan Hernandez or Gabby Guerrero in it. You know, Ryan Grosjean and Casey Gillespie. It's going to be pretty different. Pretty different seeing some not having those names in the lineup.
No, on the pitching staff, there's six or seven guys that they have returning from last season. But we've seen Joe. He had a big turnover from 2018 to 2019. A big turnover that season. Clearly, they didn't play in 2020. So it was a fairly big turnover from 2019 to 2021. And so we just got a little used to seeing some familiar faces last season, but it's going to be Joe Calfabietra finds a way. You just can't argue with that. So.
And keep in mind that team.
Kevin, I'm dying over here. I swallowed wrong. My apologies. We expect them to be good regardless there, Kevin. They'll be okay.
Can we get first aid to the Paneer studio, please?
Yeah. I'm a doctor now, but not that kind of doctor. So I might need a little help there.
But the point I'm going to make about Kansas City is that with as many guys that came back, there was, there wasn't complacency because they went out and won the division, but they didn't close the deal against Fargo. And that there tells you that maybe through guys retiring, guys moving on, and so that it could be coincidence that it was time to maybe shuffle the deck a little bit with the Monarchs and see what you can come up with.
Yeah, right. Joe likes a hungry team, and he wanted to make sure those guys were all in, I'm sure. Let's talk a little bit about Milwaukee, Kevin. They signed right-handed pitcher Kyle Mora. They return, the return of Nate Hadley, who was closing out games for them last season, then had his contract purchased. He'll be back with the club this season. You know, that bullpen was just phenomenal last season with Rodrigo Benoit coming in and taking over the closer's role. Now you got Hadley returning back to him. It looks like this group is going to be set to go.
That's a couple of really nice pieces with Mora and Hadley both. And, you know, just like we were talking about with Kansas City, it's, there's not going to be any get familiar with them factor for Anthony Barone. He knows what these guys offer, and he'll be able to slot them in right where he needs them right away.
Justin Williams, also signed by the club. Hector Sanchez contract was released technically by the team with the signing of Roy Morales that Kevin talked about last week. Clearly was the made Sanchez kind of a expendable at that point. The biggest thing, though, Kevin, Kars Kowalczyk got released. And, man, I think 6 years now, 5 years we've been watching Kars pitch in the American Association, I believe, and going to be sad that he's not in the league this year, at least at this point.
Well, 2019 was his first year, so four seasons. So, yeah, it's a little different, you know, and who knows, maybe it'll pop up with somebody.
I like Karch. Nothing else. That's a great name. We'll just go with that. My favorite transaction of the week, Kevin, was Caleb Schmidt traded away from Winnipeg to Windy City, where he was then traded on to Ottawa and back to Winnipeg. I love that trade. I don't think we've seen a guy traded and acquired back in the same day in a multi-team trade. So that was kind of interesting for me this week. So that was a Winnipeg's claim to fame for the week. Cleburne.
Well, that could be like hockey where if he winds up back in, you know, in the Frontier League, will they do like a video in his honor when he comes back to Windy City and then Ottawa? Just highlighting his great moments as a member of those two ball clubs.
I think they should do that. I think that would be awesome. Yeah, his minutes with the club. Yeah, definitely. Oh boy, Cleburne signs catcher Guillermo Quintana and adds infielder Kevin Vicuña. I believe that is the way that is said. I hope I'm saying that right, Kevin. In Kane County, outfielder Dondre Hubbard is signed, and they also signed right-handed pitcher C.J. Eldred and left-handed pitcher Spencer Van Skoljak. Man, these guys have got difficult names for me. I apologize, guys. I hope I'm saying these things correctly. So, who else we got? Fargo re-signs right-handed pitcher Tanner Riley, who was a quality right-hander for the club last season, and Chicago signs right-handed pitcher Joe Calviero, who was also very good for the team last year. So good to see those guys back with the team. And Sioux City, our last transaction of the week, signs Felix Paulino to their club. So, Kevin, that puts us at, I believe at this point that Gary Southshore has one player left that they can sign. Lake Country is filled with their roster. Most other teams are at 22 or more. With, of course, the Kane County Cougars, the only team under 17 at this point, with 10 officially signed. So 24 days until opening day, Kevin, and I believe it would be 14 days until spring training gets underway. So we're getting down to the exciting time of the year.
Getting back to your transactions, I thought the Tanner Riley one in Fargo kind of catches my eye because Riley was a young guy in the middle of that pitching staff last year. Don't be surprised if he ends up taking more of a prominent role on this year as maybe a seventh or eighth inning guy.
Well, you know, Joe Jones had his contract purchased by an affiliate club. It'd be interesting to see if they slid Riley right into that role.
Could very well be.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely a guy with that kind of arm. So I think that's a good point you're making up there, Kevin. And was a guy who was instrumental for them in the playoffs, really had a fantastic season for them. So pretty excited about what he brings to the table for sure. Let's jump quickly into the Frontier League next. That's what I was trying to look at here. So the only American Association, quote-unquote, news that we have out there was Tyler Beardsley was placed on the inactive list by Evansville. He was fishing for Sioux City. But was dealt in during the offseason by manager Steve Montgomery. And in the Atlantic League, I don't think there was anything that leapt out at me. That they are, I believe, now 12 days away from getting underway on their season. And nope, I don't think that they had any American Association signings or anything that just really popped out at me at this point. So, but again, they're closing out. I think their spring training starts in 2 days, and then they are on their way to starting the season. So, baseball getting underway right now, and with new rule changes going on out there, we're going to see pitch clocks in the American Association this year, Kevin, and all kinds of new crazy stuff going on out there. The baseball's trying to get infiltrated into here. So we're going to have to tell people to get off our lawn pretty soon, I have a feeling.
I think we will soon be referred to as relics.
Yeah, well, that was very sad commentary for the both of us, I think. Wow. Well, Kevin, we're getting pretty close to 10th inning stretch blasting out some stuff here, too. So I'm going to just tell fans to continue to go out there and see what Kevin is writing about, because I know he'll have good stuff going on, and we will have, I believe it was a month into the season that you had the power listing, or power rankings, I'm sorry. So fans can start catching up on that. And we had our good buddy Jen providing pictures for you last year. And so do you have any new surprises of the season that we should be on the watch out for, or are we going to keep that to yourself right now?
Well, I think the goal coming in is, to me, I don't think you can do power rankings until, I think, at least 4 weeks into the season. But if I can get motivated and time works out with my other side gigs, I will try to at least do like a Sunday notebook, because, you know, back when they used to have these things called newspapers that people would read, they're made out of paper, they had ink on them. I'm not sure if you remember those or not.
That's another relic reference, Kevin.
Yes. you know, to me, as a fan, the thing I always looked forward to was the Sunday notebook. So if I can get the motivation and can rack my brain up for some ideas, I'd like to do it like a Sunday notebook that would obviously come out every Sunday, maybe do the Sunday notebook on Sunday mornings, just like the Sunday newspaper came out with. But, you know, covering the local town ball team, they're starting up like first week of May, so I'll be also doing stuff with them, and a lot of their games fall on Sunday afternoon, so I might be scrambling a little bit on Saturday, Sunday to get content out, so hang in there with me. Some stuff might be late, or it might not catch some weeks, but for sure, once the time comes to do the true power rankings, you'll have those every Sunday night.
Like it. Yeah, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, Kevin, but as you've watched transactions over the last couple of months, as you're looking, is there a team that's really kind of caught your eye right now with some of the moves that they've made?
You know, nothing really stands out. There's been good signings, but nothing like really wow, earth shattering. Oh my God, it's gonna put these guys over the top. And I think that just kind of speaks to the quality of the league, where guy may come in with a good resume, but it's not going to guarantee success. And there are a lot of players at the same advanced ability level as the player you may want to be talking over. So yeah, simply as that be, let's wait and see how this all plays out.
You know, I think that's a great observation from you. And I don't mean to rain on anybody's parade here at this point, but as I look over teams' rosters, and I've been keeping a track, I got a spreadsheet that's of everybody's signing. You know, last year, I think we looked at Kansas City and we just thought, man, this team looks head and shoulders above everybody else. And it was like, you thought Kansas City, Fargo, and then it was, you know, kind of after that was the next group of teams. I really don't feel like anybody has made a huge separation, at least on paper at this point, in comparison to any other team out there. I feel like this is a very competitive league this season. And maybe I'm off base, but it doesn't look like anybody's got that super team this year.
No, they don't. And I guess if something to me has stood out, I think it's the upgrades with Gary South Shore Rail Cats, where I don't think they're going to be as much of a question mark as we've been used to with them the last 4 or 5 years. I think they're going to be a team that they're going to be good right away. It's not going to be a bunch of guys that are going to have to get used to the pro game. I think right out of the chute, I think they're going to be a team that will be a good product on the field, and it'll be interesting to see how that relates in the standings, if they can get off to a lead and maybe make a run at a division title.
Yeah, I think you're right about that too. I think that's going to be a big time surprise team this year. I really like the lineup of Cleburne. I think that they look like they could be, that could be the best offense in the league. Now, the question mark for them will be what kind of pitching staff they're going to get, especially heading into July and August when it's unbearably hot down there in Cleburne. Does Kevin Hilton show us the Kevin Hilton he did from August on last year? And what's their bullpen look like? It's completely revamped for this season, so it's going to be interesting to watch what's going on with them. And so a lot of great storylines out there. That Lake Country team has a lot of AAA and former Major League guys on it, so that looks like that's going to be a pretty quality team. So, man, I think any one of these teams right now you look at and you go, wow, somebody can win this division. I mean, they have a shot at this thing. And I'm going to tell you one move that I really am kind of surprised by, Kevin, is that Mike Meyer has usually had 22 guys signed by late March or early March sometimes. This year has been very slow to sign guys. And I wonder if he's always had those 4 or 5 slots he's left open, because he's told guys, hey, look, if I sign you a contract, I'm not going to release you. I'm going to give you a shot to come out here to spring training and earn your way onto a team. Right now, technically, this club looking at 17 players in April. And I wonder if Mike has said to himself, hey, look, I got to be a winner here, and I'm going to be as careful and methodical about this as I possibly can. And I'm not going to sign anybody unless I am absolutely sure they are going to help this club. And I think we're kind of seeing some change of philosophies for managers out there.
No doubt. What's the old saying? If you're not getting better, you're getting worse. So it could be that some guys are feeling like they need to change their philosophy, so to speak, to try to keep up with everybody else.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right about that. Well, that is all the news from around Partner League Baseball out there at Minor League Sports Report. I will be doing a countdown leading into opening day with something new out there about the American Association each day with 24 days left. So we'll make sure we have that each day. And I think that leads us into the very best part of the show, the Kevin Lucco final thoughts.
Well, I didn't really have a thought of mine tonight, but I think talking a bit about the Madison Black Wolf gives me a little bit of a historical perspective and a little look into the past. And, you know, for those that are new to the American Association or to independent baseball in the upper Midwest, a lot of you might not know about the Madison Black Wolf. They were an expansion team after the Madison Muskies were a Oakland A's affiliate, and they failed in Milwaukee, playing at Warner Park, just like the Mallards are now. But 1996, the Madison Black Wolf became a member of the Northern League, and Wayne Krenchicki, who kids like us from the 80s may remember, was a utility infielder for the Cincinnati Reds. He was the first manager of the team, and they had some pretty good ball clubs, but they never drew in Madison, and eventually the team, it just didn't work out. And I don't know if it was a relocation or if the team folded and the spot was taken over, but basically the Madison Black Wolf became the Lincoln Salt Dogs. But when the Muskies came around, the Madison Mallards came around, they figured out, you're in a college town. Hey, plenty of college kids hanging out looking for stuff to do in the summer. Let's do something to appeal to them. Hey, guess what? You can come out to the Mallards game. You can be outside. We got all these specialty seating areas where you can drink and catch a ball game and have a good time. And the Mavs and Mallards have been the gold standard of how to draw in college summer league baseball. Nobody comes close to the crowds they get. So I say that as a little bit of a, maybe a little bit of a history lesson to some of the teams in our league that are having trouble getting some fans out. My message would be, take a look around to your local colleges. How many kids are sticking around during the summer? And are you doing anything to entice those students to come out and plop down $6 to $10 and come in and take in a game? So, you know, you got like a, well, I mean, look at the Salt Dogs. They're Lincoln, Nebraska. That's a huge university by there. So that would be my message, I think, to the teams of the American Association. Kind of take a look around your community. Take a look. Do you have a college that's in session in the summer? Do you have anything else going around that in the summer where there's potential fans out there to try to draw to your ballpark? So never stop trying to think of ways to make your franchise better. And I think that's one way, is trying to appeal to the demographic that's maybe not going to buy your most expensive ticket, but they're going to come out and drink a bunch of beers that you'll make some pretty good money on.
You know, that's a great point, Kevin, because when you start to look around the league, you know, Fargo's up there, North Dakota State right by there, Chicago's got a ton of colleges around them, the Monarchs are right near Lawrence, so you're not very far away from the University of Kansas. Probably 9 or 10 teams in the American Association have a large college or university right by them. So many, I guess, in some instances. So plenty of young 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids out there looking for something to do in the summer. So get them out to the park. Love it. Well, Kevin and I want to thank Matt Yazel for joining us here today. We know he's going to do a great job in the American Association. For Kevin Loco, I'm Rob Panier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.